Good morning, and thank you for attending. My name is Hillel Cohen. I'll be moderating the session. Let me just say as a preamble that right now the big news in the country, if not the world, is the economic crisis. And that has pushed off the front pages news about the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and pushed over even more so the so-called war on terrorism and so on. But let me suggest that all of these are not unrelated, and that certainly the wars that are going on have very much something to do with the economic crisis. His name just escaped me. He wrote the $1 trillion war, and the Nobel economist, and how it very much is contributing to the economic crisis. And I would suggest that the bioterrorism activity was very much a part of getting us into the war. So I think they're not unrelated. As a way of proceeding, I think it may be best we'll go through the presentations, and then that'll leave us substantial time for a general discussion rather than breaking it up with discussion after each presentation. I'd also mention that there is a sign-up sheet that's on the back table, and I'll also, during the meeting, I'll circulate some. If you'd like to either get copies of slides, or you'd like to be on a mailing list from the Socialist Caucus, or be involved in any of these, getting updates on any information regarding these issues and related issues, please add your name to the email list. I guarantee that it would be a low volume list. All right, our first presenter is Donna Barry. Donna is the Advocacy and Policy Director for Partners in Health. Partners in Health is an internationally recognized organization founded by Dr. Paul Farmer that supports community-based health services in Haiti, Peru, Russia, and elsewhere around the world. And she'll be presenting on Funding Bioterrorism, A Great Leap Backward for Public Health. Donna.
Thanks, Hillel, and thanks again also to everyone who's here today. So most of my colleagues who know me here at the American Public Health Association were very surprised to see that I was giving this talk today, given my background, which is more in tuberculosis and also STD. So I found a good way to work that all in to the talk today. So let's go ahead and get started. I like keyboards. Can I see that? Okay. All right. Great. So I have no personal financial relationships to disclose this morning. And I just wanted to start, actually, when I was doing some research for this presentation today, I actually really had a good time doing it. It's a good thing to present on things you don't know a ton about, because you get to learn a lot. And so while I was doing research, I really had a good time reviewing the history of the U.S. Public Health Service and why it exists and when it started and what its original intents were. excuse me. It was first established in 1912, and it was supposed to be supervising quarantines, taking care of sanitation and water issues, preventing the interstate spread of disease, and doing general epidemiology investigations, as well as research projects, and also coordinating national and state public health efforts, which sounds pretty straightforward, and I think what most of us think it is supposed to be doing today as well. The first categorical grant was actually for STD control among soldiers returning from World War I. And in 1922 was the first maternal and child health funding, which is also still a big part of what the Public Health Service does today. With the New Deal funding, it moved into an even broader spectrum of tuberculosis, working with disabled children, mental health, dental health, and also industrial hygiene. And then in 1945, we got to the first block grants, which started allowing a lot of flexibility on the state side to be able to do with the money from the federal government what they thought were their needs. So in 1965, which many of you will recall, actually, is when the Social Security Act was passed, and we had an incredible shift from just infectious disease surveillance work to and prevention work to treatment. And so Medicare and Medicaid really have become the dominant parts of our public health service funding as well as work in the last, 40 years? But I thought this quote was fantastic, that public health today has become a tiny bit of everything, but not enough of anything. So just to give a little perspective to the anthrax events in 2001 after September 11th, five people died and 11 illnesses occurred from that situation. Also in that year, 1.7 million people around the world died from HIV/AIDS. At least 530,000 women died from pregnancy-related causes, and over 10 million children died from preventable causes as well. Sorry about this, but I just wanted to show funding, and I've got this in a graph form in a second, but so this is Department of Health and Human Services civilian biodefense funding from 01 to 09. And really what I wanted to point out on this is to show that we went from 67 million to in 01 right after, and then increasingly up for a while into the 900s, and then starting gradually to decline actually to where we are in FY 2009, which was budgeted, and actually I don't have the actual appropriation, but I think with the because we did the continuing resolution, it's probably not fully funded, but it's down to about 600 million for FY 09. And this is only to show that as I was researching this, most of the research that has been done on what public health, state and county public health officials and workers think about the bioterrorism funding, what most of that research was done in 02 and 03. There's been very little research actually done on it in the past couple of years. And at that time, in 03, 02, people were saying, well, yes, it's taking people away from our normal work. We are diverting resources in case that we have to do, this is my favorite, a surge. But you know, there is a silver lining in that we are able to strengthen some of our other surveillance systems, our epi work, and we're able to get more updated computer equipment and that sort of thing. But so what I think is actually concerning is that with the increase in funding here, to start seeing it dropping down again without seeing other public health funding increase, we're losing all over across the board. So I think that's really problematic. Here you'll just see this in a graphic form of the funding, and just to show that it was pretty much a steady funding for the last few years. And this actually shows an increase here, but that certainly doesn't reflect what we saw in the last chart. So to get back to the perspective part, I just wanted to revisit here for a second where our funding was for some of the issues that I had shown about the deaths around the world. So this is, you'll see a huge decrease in funding for maternal and child health through USAID after 2001, and pretty much steady funding when you adjust for inflation over the past few years with a nice increase in the past year. Same will go for almost everything I'm going to show you. Family planning dollars, same to help prevent the maternal deaths. Also, steady decrease in funding actually until a little bit of a blip last year. And also, so for infectious diseases, this would be TB, malaria, HIV, et cetera. And clearly, you've got the nice PEPFAR funding here that has helped support HIV work around the world, which is absolutely welcome and was absolutely necessary. But it, as you'll see, some of our TB money's also incredibly steady or you know, non-funded increasingly over the past few years, with a blip here, but that's also PEPFAR related. And not appropriated yet for 409. And this is, so here's some US STD funding. And this to me is what, given my background in as a nurse and someone who's worked in public STD clinics, this is where you see the lack of funding across the United States in our public health services. And you see that we were steady funded between 04 and 08, while our cases were actually either increasing or staying steady. So here's our chlamydia rates, and I won't go into my outrage. I mean, the fact that we can't get very simple bacterial infections in this country under control is one of the biggest travesties of the U.S. Public Health Service not being well-funded and not working well in this country. So here you'll see increases at every level from 91 all the way up till today. These actually keep going up in 2009 for chlamydia rates. Our gonorrhea rates, actually, this is the only one that has shown a decline, but it's a 1% decline between 01 and 06. The chlamydia rates, actually, there was a 32% increase in cases between 01 and 06. And syphilis, look at how low we are here in the rates. So I want you to make sure you realize how little of an increase this shows, but in fact, it's a 60% increase in primary and secondary syphilis between 01 and 06 in the United States. And let me shift to the next little bit that I wanted to talk about, and this is extremely drug-resistant tuberculosis, which became a big issue a couple of years ago when we found the huge amount of cases in KwaZulu-Natal in South Africa, as well as Andrew, what's his last name? The famous lawyer from Atlanta who flew across the ocean with a possible case, Andrew Speaker, a possible case of XDR, which turned out actually only to be MDR, in I think it was 06. So this is actually from one of our clinics in Lesotho, where we have seen it. We started a treatment program for tuberculosis in general, but drug-resistant tuberculosis just 2 years ago. We are seeing incredibly high rates, no surprise, in the middle of South Africa as well, of rates of drug-resistant tuberculosis. And a lot of people in clinics in conditions like this, where they are all squished together in poorly ventilated areas where the spread of tuberculosis is very easy. Now, given Partners in Health's history with drug-resistant tuberculosis, and I don't know how familiar many of you are with it, but we first started treating it back in the mid-90s in Peru, at a time when the World Health Organization, U.S. funders, basically said it was not feasible to treat, and I have a slide on that, but because it was too expensive, it's too many drugs, too complicated, it was too hard. And in fact, anybody who had that disease was basically sentenced to die because no one was willing to put the resources into treatment. However, this is one of the most easily spread infectious diseases in the world, and yet we're focusing billions of dollars on a possible threat of bioterrorism, and yet an existing threat like MDR and XDR, which we knew how to treat and we know how to prevent, was going untreated and really not paid attention to at all. So now, I just want to point out where we've got XDR-TB. So, and I don't know if everybody's familiar with the definition of XDR-TB. It is resistant to at least our top two drugs, isoniazid and rifampicin, as well as to two categories of other medications. So in many cases, it's actually untreatable. We have about a 40-50% success rate treating it in our project sites in Russia and in Peru. With surgical intervention, with better care in the United States, it's probably a higher rate of treatment. I haven't seen a study on that. One may have been done. But I just want to show the extent of it and in all of these different places, and to tell you that there's no doubt that it's all over here, and there's absolutely no doubt it's all over here. But we don't have the data at this point. So just what I said, when we were looking at drug-resistant tuberculosis in the 90s and the early 2000s, everyone said it's too costly, it's too hard to diagnose, it's probably a less fit bug, so we really don't need to be that concerned about it. And in fact, it's likely less transmissible, but everything that we've seen in the last 10 years has shown the opposite of that. So just while we've been concerned over the last 7 years with the bioterrorism threats here in the United States, XDR and MDR have been running rampant around the world, and many times in countries where they don't have the capability to detect nor to treat. And just to put it in perspective again, some numbers. In every year there are at least 500,000 new cases of drug-resistant tuberculosis around the year. What percentage of those are extremely drug-resistant, we don't know at this point. But we do know, I take that back, sorry. There's probably about a total of 30,000 cases of XDR, TB in the world. And so I just use all of this to point out, to point out that these are examples of very treatable or at least very preventable diseases that are right in our face, right in front of us, especially STDs that cost pennies to treat today. And we ignore them at our peril and also, I think, to our shame. So thank you.